And now, One Feller's Family, brought to you by Finke, F-I-N-Q-U-E, the finest name in bicycle clips. Today's episode, entitled October, is taken from Book 15, Chapter XIV, pages 10. It's shortly afternoon as we look in on the family.
Here is Mother Butcher coming down the
falling
hall,
down
to Father Butcher,
that she will soon answer the door.
You be
now.
Quiet, Major Doucher.
Yes, sir.
Why does he do that, anyway?
I don't know. Sooner
or
later,
saying?
He's going to take up the whole episode with the synopsist.
What were you saying before he interrupted
us? Sandy, I was just saying that now that we're into October, the summer has gone by once again.
Oh, yes. Summer's all over now. The leaves are all turning, and the lawn is turning brown.
That's
because you got so much crabgrass there, you old goat.
Beautiful time of year.
Next door, the lawn is still green.
Well, I had to spend all of my time with the rose bushes, Sally.
You don't have to spend all your time with the rose bushes. We didn't have one bud on that bush all year.
Well, that's because they were trimmed back a little bit too far, too soon.
Always do it. Right after breakfast, you go out and trim the rose bushes.
You
drive me crazy sometimes.
I'll have to begin raking the leaves pretty soon. Burning them in the backyard.
They make nice mulch, you know, those leaves, if you just leave them on some of the flower beds.
Yes. Keep the weeds from coming up through the tomato plants, if we had any.
Well, tomato plants wouldn't grow this time of the year.
Oh, it's fall, Fanny.
Of course it's fall. It's October.
There's a nip in the air.
You have been listening to One Fella's Family, brought to you by Finke, F-I-N-Q-U-E, the finest name in bicycle clips. Today's episode, entitled October, was taken from Book 15, Chapter XIV, pages 10. One Fella's Family is written and produced by T. Wilson Messi. This is a Messi production. And now, One Fella's Family, brought to you by Finke, F-I-N-Q-U-E, Finke. Makers of solid gold water faucets. Today's episode, entitled Cutting Wood for the Fireplace, is taken from Book 15, Chapter IV, pages 12, 13, 14, and the top of page 16. As we look in on the family now, we find them standing in the kitchen.
Fairly, it's about time we selected a Yule log. Get it cut and brought into the living room.
Well, don't get one as big as you got last year. You brought that fool old log in here and smoked up the house.
Well, it was damp, that was why.
Well, don't get one of those. Why don't you get a little sapling?
Well, it wouldn't burn long enough, Andy.
We'll get several saplings. We don't have to have one Yule log. That went out centuries ago.
It's a nice old custom.
Well, I know, but it's impractical with the small fireplace we have and the poor draft and all. It fills the house with smoke. It takes me till February to get the smell out, you old gaffer. Get some little logs this year. Use your pumpkin for once. Use your pumpkin.
You mean my squash?
Well, whatever you want to call it, whatever there on your shoulders, you nitwit.
Well, I don't see
it. I'm sick and tired of you fussing around here, always trying to live 300 years ago.
Fandy, fandy, fandy.
Well, it's always this, cutting wood for the fireplace.
You have been listening to One Feller's Family, brought to you by Finke, F-I-N-Q-U-E, makers of solid gold water faucets. Today's episode, entitled Cutting Wood for the Fireplace, was taken from Book 15, Chapter IV, pages 12, 13, 14, and the top of page 16. One Fella's Family is written and produced by T. Wilson Messi. This is a Messi production. And now, One Fowler's Family. Brought to you by Fink, F-I-N-Q-U-E, a family-owned cartel. Today's episode, entitled Decorating the Christmas Tree, taken from Book 11, Chapter 5, pages 14 through 19. As we look in on the family now, it's shortly after 7 in the evening.
Well, Penny, how does it look?
That seems to be just a little crooked. It seems to be leaning a little to the left.
Let me see if I can straighten it up before we start to decorate it. Here, I'll just crawl underneath and adjust the little stand there.
Why is it every year when you get the tree up, it always seems to lean a little?
I don't know, Fanny. Certainly is a job, though. How does that look?
Looks fine, but I believe it's the first tree that we've ever had fall so much. I mean, all the little things falling out of it so early.
The needles.
Needles? I couldn't think of that word.
Shedding.
Yes, what?
Shedding.
Yes, I know. It seems to be so early that we've ever had a tree do that.
Well, it may be a sign that it's an old tree, Fanny.
You better get up from the floor there now, I think.
There's a draft down there.
I don't know where the draft would be coming unless you left the cellar windows open.
Well, where are the decorations now, Fanny?
Well, the box is right out here in the entryway. You, the tree is so pretty now.
It's the most beautiful tree we've ever had, Fanny. We say that every year.
Would you help me with the box of decorations?
Yes, of course.
All right.
All right. Well, let's open them up and see if they're all there.
Tree seems to be listing.
Again? Fanny,
yes.
Fanny. Look. It's falling.
Oh, isn't that a shame?
You've been listening to One Feller's Family, brought to you by Fink, F-I-N-Q-U-E, a family-owned cartel. Today's episode, entitled Decorating the Christmas Tree, was taken from Book 11, Chapter V, pages 14 through 19. One Feller's Family is written and produced by T. Wilson Messick. This is a Messy production. And now, One Feller's Family, brought to you by the Fink Company, now bordering on bankruptcy. Today's episode, entitled Trick or Treat, is taken from Book 23, Chapter XIX, pages 11 through 16. As we look in on the Butcher family now, they're standing in the kitchen, and Father is just inside the back door.
Fanny,
I'm standing
just inside the back door now.
Close it. It's awfully breezy.
Certainly is. It's a mighty cold day for...
You put up a storm weld around that door like I requested.
Well, I tried to put the full thing up, but it's still drafty.
All you have to do is put it up with some tacks and keep the door snug.
You know, this is the 34th Halloween we have spent in this house.
34?
That means 34 years we've lived here.
Certainly a flown by. Remember when all the children were here?
Yes, those were happy times then.
Smanky and Lanky. Ricky and Mickey.
Minky.
And Sinky.
We certainly had a house full in those days.
All tricking and treating in the neighborhood.
Used to come in with some mighty good tricks or treats, too.
Well, they used to get candy bars and chewing gum.
Candy dipped apples.
I don't remember that. I don't ever remember
one of them coming home
with a candied apple.
31 years ago.
No, sir.
Hanky came home with a candied apple.
He did not. No.
Maybe it was 30 years ago.
I've never remembered them getting a candied
apple. Fanny.
I don't want to fight over this. It's not that important.
Well, I wouldn't...
But I never remember any one of them coming home with a candied apple after tricking or treating, and that's final.
Not worth fighting over,
Well,
Fanny.
I'm not fighting, but I do wish...
But one of them came home with a candied apple.
They did not.
Fanny.
A good treat.
Nancy, do you remember the episode from 31 years ago when Panky came home with a candied apple?
No, I don't.
Oh.
You have been listening to One Fellas Family, brought to you by the Fink Company, now bordering on bankruptcy. Today's episode, entitled Trick or Treat, is taken from Book 23, Chapter XIX, pages 11 through 16. One Fellas Family is written and produced by T. Wilson Messi. This is a Messi production. Well, hi. You bet it's time once again for Matt Neffer, Boy Spot Welder. Today we find Matt and his friend, Todd Fentress, discussing one of Matt's most vexing problems.
See, Todd, I've developed this new welding method that I think could revolutionize spot welding.
I know that, Matt, and it's only your interest that I'm thinking of.
Todd, have you been seeing Becky?
Matt, how can you say such a thing? Why, I've thought of nothing but your new spot welding system for the last few weeks.
Wait. I do want to follow up the thought of Becky. I heard downtown that you had been seeing her again.
Matt, you can't possibly
believe... Oh,
look,
it means nothing to me. I'm just thinking now of you and thinking of Becky, too. Oh,
Matt.
Here, over here. This is Satan, my cat.
Yes, a beautiful creature, too, and yet... Sometimes I wonder if she doesn't know too much, Matt.
It's a he.
Matt, have you thought of how many unscrupulous people may be after your secret of successful spot welding?
I know. I've had it discussed with me. I've been downtown to the attorney's office. I've had threatening phone calls. I've had my car pushed off the road. I've had my suit cut to shreds while walking up Main Street.
It would appear, Matt, that someone is after the secret.
Yes.
And everyone's talking about it while I was sitting on the steps of City Hall having my lunch just 2 days ago.
With Becky?
Odd that you should mention her name, Matt. No. No, I haven't seen Becky for a month and a half now.
Todd, when was the last time I ever got angry with you?
Well, I can't remember, Matt.
That's right, never. And I don't want to have to get angry now, Todd, but speaking now only in your own... Oh, would you get down, Satan, please? Look.
Surely you can't.
Think that's the end of Satan.
Anything between Becky and me, Matt? Why, she's a good friend, yes, but...
But it's not being right to jam us.
But to link us romantically, Matt, after Lawrence left and all.
Lawrence who?
Lawrence Bessinger, of course.
I think they've got me.
Well, jinkies, have the evil forces who've been trying to steal Matt Neffer's spot welding secrets finally caught up with him? And what of Becky and Janice? And who is that Bessinger kid? Join us next time when we'll hear Matt Neffer say, Todd, I don't feel well at all. And now, chocolate cookies with white stuff in between them brings you another episode of Lawrence Fechtenberger, interstellar officer candidate. 11, 3, 8, 7, 6, 8, 7, 5, 4, 3, 8, 11, 3, 2, 9, 8, 10, 1, 0. In today's exciting episode, we find Lawrence Fechtenberger in the new frontier of space. Lawrence has just had lunch and a tall glass of water as his friend Mug Mellish enters the cafeteria.
Where were you for lunch, Mellish?
What's that, Fechtenberger?
I said, where were you for lunch? You know the rules here at the Academy. All the candidates eat lunch at the same time.
I couldn't make the mess call, Fexenberger. Sorry about that.
Well, if you think that you're going to get special consideration here at the Institute, let me be one of the first to assure you that you have another thing coming to you.
Fexenberger, you going to try out the new spaceship this afternoon?
Yes, but you're not invited, Mellish. The last time I took you on one of these experimental trips, you tried to thwart my every effort.
You afraid I'll do something to spoil the takeoff for this new ship you've designed, Fexenberger?
The way you say that would lead me to believe that's exactly what you had in mind.
Your words make me recoil.
You can pass the ketchup, please.
Yeah, here you go. Hey, that hamburger looks pretty good.
It's too late for you now, Mellish.
Yeah, I know that, Fexenberger.
You had to be in line with the rest of the candidates.
I know.
Now.
How do you feel?
Dizzy. What did you put in that ketchup? Or the hamburger, the bun?
Why? Nothing, Fexenberger.
Or the water that I was drinking.
Oh, you drank a glass of water, did you?
Feel very, very strange. You won't get away with this, Mellish.
Oh, no, Fexenberger.
Every Interstellar Officer candidate will track you down to every last planet.
You just look for your spaceship this afternoon.
Chocolate cookies with white stuff in between them has brought you another exciting episode of Lawrence Fexenberger, Interstellar Officer Candidate. By the Fink Company, F-I-N-Q-U-E, now celebrating its fifth year in receivership. Today's episode, entitled Gathering Christmas Presents, is taken from Book 21, Chapter VII, pages 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, the top of page 18, and the bottom of page 19. As we look in on the Butcher family now, we find Father gathering a Christmas present.
Sandy?
Yes?
How many more presents do we have to gather?
About four more.
Yes. That's a goodly bunch under the tree there.
Yes.
I wonder if I should have bought a smaller tree.
It does seem like a big tree. It's too bad we had to cut a hole in the ceiling that way.
Well, I suppose the children will appreciate it.
Well, there's two trees on two floors. Yes. Look at it that way.
Well, it's the bottom of a tree on one floor and the top of a tree on the second floor.
Yes.
Gather that present over there.
It's an unusual... What is it? A maple tree, isn't it?
Yes. I hope the leaves last long enough through the Christmas season.
Funny you did that oftentimes, and it's the first Christmas I remember you ever bringing home a maple tree. Usually you brought home a Norwegian fir or...
Fir balsam.
What?
Fir balsam.
Oh.
Yes. Well, we've got most of the presents gathered. And soon, the snow will begin to fall. And the children will be arriving for Christmas.
Well, how do you know the snow will fall? I saw the forecast. Doesn't look very much like we'll have snow here in this part of the country.
Nonsense, Fanny. It's always snow before Christmas.
Not always. What's the matter with you, Lanny?
Fanny, we've forgotten someone.
Who?
Paul.
Who?
Paul.
Paul? Oh, you mean our boy Paul.
Yes. We'll have to get something for Paul.
What do you suppose he'd like this year?
Maybe a new tricycle.
Have you flipped your wig? Do you know how old Paul is?
Well, the last time I saw him, he was about five or six.
Well, that was 30 years ago.
Yes.
No, he's big enough for a two-wheeler now.
Yes.
You have been listening to One Feller's Family, brought to you by the Fink Company, F-I-N-Q-U-E, now celebrating its fifth year in receivership. Today's episode, entitled Gathering Christmas Presents, was taken from Book 21, Chapter VII, pages 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, the top of page 18 and the bottom of page 19. One Fella's Family is written and produced by T. Wilson Messi. This is a Messi production. And now, One Fella's Family, brought to you by the Fink Company, F-I-N-Q-U-E. The Fink Company, a wholly owned family cartel. Today's episode, entitled Changing the Fluorescent Light, is taken from Book 10, Chapter IX, pages 7, 8, 9, and 11. As we join the family, it's shortly after breakfast, and we hear...
Andy, you see my tool chest anywhere?
Down cellar.
Oh, where I thought it should be.
Why don't you just go down instead of asking me? Sometimes I think you just like to talk, like to hear your voice.
Well, I don't like to run up and down the cellar stairs unless it's absolutely necessary.
Well, where else would your toolbox be if it wasn't down cellar?
Well, sometimes it's here in the kitchen.
Only when you bring it up, and I always insist that you bring it back down.
Fanny.
Yes, what do you want to do anyway?
Want to change this fluorescent light.
Oh, it has been flicking.
Yes.
Drives me nearly crazy at night.
Well, I've got the fluorescent light out now, and now all I have to do is adapt the receptacle so that I can put this 75-watt bulb in.
Oh, you're not going to put another fluorescent bulb in?
I don't have another one, Fanny.
Well, it isn't that simple, is it, Daddy-O, just to change from one to the other?
Well, I don't know. Thought possibly if I had my tool chest here.
Why don't you wait till one of the boys comes home? Let him do it. I hate to see you get up on a stepladder. I mean, you're so, well, unsure of yourself.
Besides, I hate to fool you with anything electrical.
Well, that's another thing. I think.
This, who?
What the deuce were you doing then?
Slight shock, Betty. Put my finger there in the receptacle.
Well, you shouldn't do that. You should let one of the boys change the fluorescent light.
You have been listening to One Fella's Family, brought to you by the Fink Company, F-I-N-Q-U-A. Q-U-E. Yes, F-I-N-Q-U-E, Fink Company, a family-owned cartel. Today's episode, entitled Changing the Fluorescent Light, was taken from Book 10, Chapter IX. Pages 7, 8, 9, and 11. One Fella's Family is written and produced by T. Wilson Messi. This is a Messi production. This is Harold Messi speaking. To you today as a sustaining feature or a public service feature. Darn it. Today's episode, titled Checking the Telephone Bill, is taken from Book 5, Chapter XBII, pages 12 through 14, and the top of page 15. As we look in on the family, it's shortly after the mailman has left the morning delivery of mail, and we hear...
Sandy,
yes?
I've been looking over this telephone bill.
Well?
I can't understand how it could be so high this month. By that I mean, it's much more expensive than I had expected. In other words, the total...
What do you want to say now? Just point out the various calls.
Sandy.
See if we can straighten them out.
Well, for instance... Who do we know in Austin, Texas?
I don't know anyone in Austin, Texas.
Well, someone in this household made a phone call to Austin, Texas.
Well, I didn't make a phone call to Austin, Texas.
Did anyone call us collect from Austin, Texas?
I don't remember receiving a collect call from Austin, Texas.
And this other one here, to Bend, Oregon.
Where are you?
Bend.
Bend?
B-E-N-D, Bend.
Well,
I'm sure we don't know anyone there that we'd be calling.
Well, look here. Who do we know down in Taxco? Oh, that's Tax.
No, that's the tax on the other phone calls.
Oh, that was
long we call. Have 14 calls here to Spruce, Wyoming.
Well, I did that.
Well, who were you calling in Spruce, Wyoming?
Miss Thurston moved to Spruce last fall.
Fairly. That's no reason to make 14 calls a month.
Well, it won't happen again. It's just that poor Miss Thurston is so... so lonely there.
And this call from Punjab, India.
Well, now that, of course, is from our own daughter, Punjab.
From Claudia.
Claudia, well, I accepted the collect call.
Hey, where are you going, Penny?
Going to answer the
Keep
telephone.
Away from the telephone. Don't answer it. We can't afford it.
All right, Daddy.
You have been listening to One Fella's Family, brought to you as a public service, a sustaining feature. Today's episode, entitled Checking the Telephone Bill, was taken from Book 5, Chapter XVII, pages 12 through 14, and the top of page 15. One Fella's Family is written and produced by T. Wilson Messy. This is a Messy production. Once again, for Mr. Trace, keener than most persons. Today, the surly old investigator is taking from his files the case marked unsolved. As we look in on the old investigator now, we find he's standing by his desk.
I think I'll sit down here at my desk, Spike. It's been a long and arduous day so far.
Saints for Sabbath, boss. What are you up to now?
I was just looking over this file marked unsolved. One of baffling cases that's ever come across my desk.
I know, boss. That's why we've had such difficulty trying to figure out how it all happened, boss.
Well,
we don't even know who committed the crime. We don't even know who the poor person was that was so murdered, boss. Saints preserve us.
That's just it. What did you say, Spike?
Saints preserve us.
That's just it. We don't know who saw or did the crime. We haven't anything to go on. We can't solve it without clues, can we?
Well, I'm passionate about that, Keen. I know I've been traced plenty of times, but I've never known any laughter like that.
No, well, unless we people, we certainly won't be able to discover who did the crime.
Saints for Sabbath, boss. You catching cold now.
Have we had any phone calls from suspicious-sounding people? By that I mean, has the phone rung this morning?
No, boss. Not since I've been here, and I've been here since 9 o'clock, boss. Saints for Sabbath, the phone hasn't rung it. One ring, boss, all day.
Well, if the phone's ringing, we've stopped.
The phone is ringing now, boss.
You would have been here.
Why don't I be after
him?
Hello! State your business. This is Mr. Trace. He's keener than most persons.
Tell them whose office they're speaking to, Spike.
I guessed it. Saints for his office.
What is it, Spike?
Well, you better talk to Mr. Trace. I'm just his associate.
Be on the phone. Hello, Trace on the line. My assistant, Spike Delancey, who's been with me for a good many years, tells me that if this is something I should talk to you about, whoever you are there on the other end of the line.
Mr. Chapo?
Yes, I'm lost.
I'm very, very old person, Mr. Chapo, and I've called for your advice.
You sound as if you're in trouble.
Well, I'm lost, sir. Like everyone in my whole family here is lost.
Why, that sounds like a case. Very familiar to me. One I have on my desk at this very moment. The case marked unsolved.
You've been listening to another exciting episode of Mr. Trace, keener than most persons. Today we heard all about the case marked unsolved. Today's episode featured Mr. Trace's assistant,
Spike Delancey. Once again for Mr. Trace, keener than most persons. Today, the surly old investigator reaches into his file and removes the case marked The Pistol Upstairs Murder Clue. As we look in on the old surly investigator now, he and his companion, Spike.
Spike, will you step in here a moment, please?
Oh, sakes alive, boss. Now, don't tell me something's gone awry.
Spike, I am not sure whether something's gone awry or not. Look at this phone message taken by my answering service only half an hour ago, addressed to me, Mr. Keene, tracer than most persons.
Let me see it, Mr. Morse. It's certainly keenly of you to trace it.
No, I'm person. I believe you traced me there a while ago.
You can't keenly me, person. I'm traced, you know.
No, personally to you. Just read the message.
We're all lost here, my son.
Concerns a murder, Spike. Murder that we've been asked to solve.
Saints preserve us. What are you going to do, Mr. Person?
Well, I'm going to try and trace the Loster to the people anyway.
Well, that's keenly, Person.
It is if we treat. Will you run upstairs and get my pistol, Spike?
Well, I'll try to post upstairs, and I'll trace fast as I can.
Loster to the chapel while you're there, Spike. I think you'll find it on the desk next to my glasses. Cartridges have been removed.
Now, who'd do that, boss?
Someone with an evil mind, Spike. Someone who's trying to trap me.
Why, that's certainly person, Keeley. I feel lost it all over.
Well, don't poo-poo. We'll just go after the person who probably left the pistol there and find him.
Saints preserve us, you can't trust keenly, tracely persons no more.
You're absolutely cheapo. Warm up the engine, Spike. We're leaving.
Well, that's it, mystery fans. Today's episode of Mr. Trace, keener than most persons. Today, we saw the old investigator reach into his file and remove the case he calls the Pistol Upstairs Murder Clue. Both characters were impersonated. Fans, yes, it's time once again for Mr. Trace, keener than most persons. Today, the surly old investigator is reaching into his files and removing part two of the mystery he likes to call the Pistol Upstairs Murder Clue. As we look in now on the old investigator and his associate, Spike, they're preparing to leave the office.
Spike, come along. Let's get the high-powered black limousine started up and we'll track down the mystery of the missing pistol.
Oh, saints preserve.
Come on, quick, Spike. Into the car. They're firing at us. We can follow them if we're quick
all right
about this thing.
You have the keys, Spike.
Yes, right here. You drive, Spike.
All right. Oh, saints preserve.
Come on. Not only there we can go.
Oh, saints preserve.
Not only chance, Spike.
Why does this always have to happen to us?
I don't know. You've done no...
They're gaining on us, Spike.
You done any vehicle maintenance?
No, boss. I think it'll turn over now, boss.
They've got a good start on us, Spike. We've all but lost them.
Saints for Sabbath, boss. This isn't going to work at all.
No, it isn't, Spike. Let's
oh,
go back
these
to
these are the wrong keys, boss.
Here, try these. Sure we have gasoline enough, Spike?
Saints.
By that I mean, are we out of fuel?
Saints for Zappa, Spike.
It's never happened to me in 43 years of detecting crime.
Then go back up to the office, Spike.
Right. We'll try to track down the criminal from there.
You have been listening to another exciting episode of Mr. Trace, keener than most persons. Today's episode was entitled Part 2 of the mystery that Mr. Trace likes to call the Pistol Upstairs Murder Clue. Mystery fans. Yes, it's time once again for Mr. Trace, keener than most persons. Today, the surly old investigator opens his file door and reaches in and removes part 3 of the mystery he chooses to call the Pistol Upstairs Murder Clue. Today, we discover the surly old investigator and his companion Spike in the office.
Spike, if we don't chapel to the lofter right away, we've probably lost complete track of the man that we're tracing.
Saints preserve us, boss. Who do you think is in back of all this, boss?
As soon as I receive this phone call, Spike, I'll know.
What phone call?
This one here. How did you know that one? It's my powers of... Hello! Mr. Trace, personally on the line.
Hello.
I'm keener than most persons.
Don't move.
But...
You're right in the sight.
Where are you? Across the street?
I'm 3 blocks away from you. Did I get you?
No. Spike, run downstairs. Yes, warm up the high-powered black limousine. I'll keep him talking.
All right, Bob.
Now, sir, what was it you were saying?
Plenty of time to keep me talking, huh? What do you want to know?
I want to know, sir, if you have anything to do with the missing Pistol Upstairs murder clue.
I just don't like the way you've been operated, Mr. Trace. Me and the boys that head the underground don't like it. Yeah?
Wait just a moment. I'm going to walk to the window.
I'll wave if I can see it.
Spike, are you down there?
Say, it's the office, boss. The car won't start at all. It did start, boss, but I turned it off accidentally.
Well, what's the matter with it now, Spike?
I don't know, boss. Unless it's the trunk key in the ignition, boss.
I'll try to keep him talking on the phone. Hello?
Yeah, what do you want?
Can you tell me where you are, sir?
Yeah, I'm about 4 blocks from here, and you're still in range, too. What do you want to know?
I want to know what you plan to do.
Did I get you that time?
No, but you were closer.
I missed, huh? Well, what else you want to know?
Well, nothing in particular, I guess.
Oh, Bart!
Yes, Spike?
It still ain't started.
Well, never mind. Come back upstairs.
Want me to hang up now?
Yes, you might as well, sir. There's no use trying to follow you.
Yeah, I mean to try to keep...
That's it, fans. You've just heard part 3, the final episode of the Pistol Upstairs Murder Clue. All gathered up in one neat ball here on Mr. Trace, keener than most persons. Join us next time when we'll hear that's Mr. Trace, keener than most persons. And now, One Fella's Family, again brought to you as a sustaining feature, a public service feature. Today's episode, entitled Phone Call from Clifford, is taken from Book 31, Chapter VII, pages 12, 13, 62, and a little bit of 84. As we look in on the Butcher family today, Mother is standing by the pantry door, Father is soaking his feet.
I can't understand it, Felly.
Then we hear Mother Butcher say...
Can't understand what?
Then we hear Father Butcher answer...
The fact that we ever heard from Clifford for a week and a half now.
Then we hear Mother...
Young man, for goodness sakes, will you let us get to the dramatic episode, please? Tried the same thing 2 weeks ago, and I had to call the agency.
Why don't you dry up? Just read what's written for you.
No place in the script does it say for you to say, now mother says, now father says.
Had your way, you'd be introducing every line in the dramatic portion.
I'm awfully sorry. I will not do it again.
See that you don't, Rubberhead.
Sandy, I can't understand why we haven't heard from Clifford for a week and a half.
What?
I say we haven't heard from Clifford in over a week now.
I know, but he must be all right.
Confounded young whippersnapper anyway.
Who?
That announcer.
Oh, he is a pill. But anyway, about Clifford, I would assume, though, that no...
Spoils any dramatic talent you have.
What?
I say he spoils any dramatic talent you may have.
Well, he takes the fun out of it. Tries to crab the show. Now then, what were you saying?
Something about Clifford.
I think of that amounts of the matter, I get.
Why
couldn't he just do the commercial, sign on the show like all the announcers do, and then go sit down and wait until the end of the program and sign us off the way they do?
Not only that, but he takes so long the wind reduces, we never get to the final page of the dramatic book.
Sport jacket.
You have been listening to One Feller's Family, brought to you by this station as a public service. Today's episode, titled Phone Call from Clifford, was taken from Book 31, Chapter VII, pages 12, 13, 62, and a little bit of page 84. One Fellow's Family is written and produced by T. Wilson Messi. Address any complaints to him. This is a Messi production. Public service. Another episode of One Feller's Family. Today's episode, titled Changing the Fuse, is taken from Book 3, 105, Chapter CLVMX, pages 11, 12, and the bottom of page 4. It's dark as we look in on the family. And...
Sandy, have you seen a flashlight anywhere?
Well, now that fuse is out in the living room. We won't be able to sit there and read.
Confounded thing, anyway. I wonder which one it is.
It's down cellar in the fuse box.
Well, I'll go down and see if I can find out. I left the new fuses on top of the fuse box.
Yes.
Now I'm going down cellar.
All right. Walking down the steps down cellar?
Yes, I am. Where was the confounded fuse box anyway?
I think I'll come down. Do you want me to check on the lights up here?
You'd better stay up there, Sandy, so you can tell if I find the right burned out fuse.
Yeah.
I'll just unscrew this one.
Oh, now the lights are out all over. Yeah. The hall, the lights are out.
Well, it must have been the wrong one. Confounded darkness, if I could see what I'm... How is that?
Well, now the light's out in the kitchen.
Here. That's the fuse for the kitchen, then. Now, how about the toaster? Is the toaster working?
Well, now, I'm not going out to try the toaster. If the light works...
Well, sometimes
right
the toaster
kitchen.
Could be on a different circuit than the
light. Well, we don't want the toaster going now.
I'd like some toast when I come upstairs.
You didn't go down to fix the toaster.
You won't need the toaster
tomorrow when you can see what you're doing.
How about this one?
Oh, no. The lights are all out now in the dining room there.
In the dining room, eh?
Yeah.
Well, I'll try this one, then.
They're all out now. Not a light on in the house.
Yes.
Not one light on.
Confounded electrical system anyway.
Not one light on in the whole house.
How about the toaster?
Oh, I don't care about the toaster. If the lights are out, the toaster won't work.
Well,
what was that?
Finally, I put my finger in the socket. Confounded.
Lights came on, though.
Well, I'll stand here, then.
All right. See you in the morning.
Call the electrician.
You You have been listening to One Feller's Family, brought to you as a public service. Today's episode, entitled Changing the Fuse, was taken from Book 3, 105, Chapter CLVMX, pages 11, 12, 13, and the bottom of page 4. One Feller's Family is written and produced by T. Wilson Messi. This is a Messi production. Again, yes, that's right. It's time now for One Feller's Family. Today's episode, entitled Making Applesauce, is taken from Book 31, Chapter IX, pages 20, 21, 22, and the middle of page 56. As we look in on the family now, we find Mother standing at the kitchen table, and Father is saying,
Fish, what's that you're speaking, Fanny?
Well, we'll make some applesauce. Got such a nice bag of Baldwin apples that I thought that I might as well use them up before they go all.
Going to make applesauce, eh? Well, it'll be good to taste some applesauce again. What kind of apples are you using?
Well, I'm going to use some Jonathan's.
That should be delicious.
No, they're Jonathan apples.
Oh, they're no more finer apple than a Macintosh.
I know, but they're purely for eating. You can cook them if you want, but it's a shame to. They're best just eat them
I think I'll just go downtown.
What do you got all over the front of your vest for the land? Is that oatmeal?
Oh, scrambled egg.
Well, get it off there. What in the world? Go downtown looking like that.
You noticed that there was anything on my vest?
Well, if you'd use the napkin like I put out at the table all the time, this wouldn't happen.
Fendi, Fendi, Fendi.
Oh, for the land's sake. Hey, would you hand me that paring knife?
Ooh.
Don't you know enough to hand it to a person handle first? Never hand the blade to a... What in the world is wrong?
I was simply afraid of cutting myself, that's all.
You used to be so polite. Act like a cavalier. Now you're just a big bumble.
Fendi, Fendi,
Fendi. Oh, dry up and bust, will you? Are you going somewhere?
You have been listening to One Feller's Family. Today's episode, entitled Making Applesauce, taken from Book 31, Chapter IX, pages 20, 21, 22, and the middle of page 56. Copies of the recipe are not available. One Feller's Family is written and produced by T. Wilson Messi. This is a Messi production. By this station as a public service. Today's episode, entitled Sounds in the Night, is taken from Book 62, Chapter IX, pages 20, 21, 22, and the bottom of page 23. As we look in on the family now, it's shortly after 1 a.m., and we find the Butches in their twin beds with single headboard.
Hey, you wait.
Huh?
Do you hear a noise?
Go to sleep, Eddie.
Don't tell me to go to sleep. I heard a noise. I'll go to sleep when I want to go to sleep.
Heard you call me, Fanny?
Yes, I just heard a noise. I thought it would be nice if you...
A noise? A noise in the night, you mean?
Yes. Seemed like it was downstairs, down in the dining room. You don't suppose they're after our silverware, do you?
I don't believe so. I locked all the doors before we came upstairs.
Did you lock the bulkhead?
I think so. Come to think of it, I don't remember definitely, though.
Well, why don't you go on down and look and satisfy your own mind?
A lot of robberies in this neighborhood lately, Fanny.
Well, I hadn't read any of those.
A lot of footpads around.
Put the light on.
Yes, where is the confounded thing?
It is right there. Look. You go on down now, will you, and see if there's anybody down there.
All right, well, I think it's your imagination, Fanny. You hear anything?
Well, now, you tripped over something there. Look.
Yes. Just that chair I left downstairs. I'll be right back.
All right. My goodness. Is there anything down there? Who are you talking to?
It's for me, little Fanny. I'll be...
Who are you talking to down there at this hour? What are you doing down there?
Making a sandwich. I'll be right back.
For the land's sake.
There's no one down here at all.
Well, just sounds in the night.
You have been listening to One Fellow's Family. Brought to you as a public service by this public-spirited radio station. Today's episode entitled Sounds in the Night was taken from book 62, chapter IX, and several pages of that chapter. One Fellow's Family is written and produced by T. Wilson Messi. This is a Messi production. Fancy that, the barber of Hartdale. As we look in on the barber, incidentally, he's brought to you by stuff that fizzes in your stomach and is good for you. We look in on the good barber. He's standing in his shop now, and he's giving Pliny, his friend, a haircut. Let me hear.
Well, Pliny, mighty good to see you again.
Well, mighty good to see you.
Oh, now, shucks. Better me to see you than for you to see me.
The suede shoes, fancy Dan?
Yeah, them are yeller. How do you like them?
I want to tell you a mighty good...
Turn just a little bit to the right there, Pliny. There we go. I'll get that little shock of hair there over your ear. What were you saying, Pliny?
I just want to tell you that we're all mighty grateful here in Hartdale for what you've done for us.
Shuckins, now, you don't need to be grateful for nothing I've done.
We're all mighty grateful. My wife's grateful, too.
Oh, and how's your wife, Pliny?
Grateful, mighty grateful.
Suppose you're all pretty grateful for all of my help.
Kids are all grateful, too, Dan.
Does your wife feel very grateful to me for
mighty grateful. She only echoes the way I feel.
Well,
kids
it's
all
to
feel
be,
grateful.
Nothing to be thankful for, Pliny.
We want you to know we're grateful, Dan.
No. Now, I would have done it to anybody just the same as I've done for you.
It's all right.
I often just... say if I didn't stick my nose in other people's business, I wouldn't be able to do them a good turn like this.
Yes, mighty nice jacket.
How's your wife?
She's over it. Grateful, and the kids are all grateful, Dan.
And you, I suppose you are, too, Pliny.
I'm grateful, too.
Well, you don't need to be.
Well, shuckin's. What kind of man do you think I'd be not to be grateful for what you've done?
The consigned thing, anyway. You don't need to be that grateful. I ain't done nothing.
Well, you've done a lot, and we're grateful, and the wife's grateful.
Yeah, how'd you like the new yellow suede shoes I'm wearing, Pliny?
Mighty grateful. I'm mighty grateful.
You know, a lot of folks hereabouts, when they see me walking down the street for these the first day, they say, what's come over that plain fancy dad? Well, I just said to myself, they'll get over. How's your wife and your kids, Pliny?
I'm grateful.
Good.
Kids are all grateful.
Yeah, I bet your wife is pretty grateful. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, shucks, it ain't nothing.
Oh, it seems as how I kind of like to have knit you there.
Then I'd best lie down.
Yeah, I think you better let the... Yeah, let me put your feet up here on that pillar there.
Oh, now, shucks, I don't want you fretting over me.
No, I'm terribly sorry, Pliny.
We're all grateful.
How are the kids?
Grateful. Almighty grateful.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry about that razor nick there I done give you.
Why, shucks, I've had a full life.
Oh, now, don't go talking like that,
Pliny. I have.
Oh, you're going to be all right, I'm sure.
You've been listening to another episode of Just Fancy Dan, the Shark Barber in Hartsdale.
Ladies, it's time again for another of Aunt Penny's true-to-life stories. This is Danny sitting in her kitchen with the sunlight streaming through the windows. And hello, Aunt Penny.
Hello, Danny, and hello, story lovers everywhere.
Hey, what are these ginger snaps you've just baked on?
Yes, I certainly have, and they're made with digestible chicken fat. That's one thing you don't have to worry about, Danny. These are so thoroughly digestible. They set in your stomach like a half a dollar.
Well, I certainly know that, Aunt Penny, and I'm sure all the ladies do. Everything you cook, bake, or fry should be fried.
That's right, ladies. Nowadays, with the busy schedules that we all have, it's awfully nice to know that we can still enjoy fried foods and not worry about getting sick.
Right, oh, Aunt Penny, and good for all the family, too. Well, now, we're all dying to see what our true-to-life story is going to be about for today.
Well, it's the story...
I'm going to help myself to another one of these ginger snaps while you're telling your story.
Do help yourself, Danny. There's one thing about them. They're digestible. You can eat them to your heart's content.
Thanks to chicken fat, eh, Aunt Penny?
That's right. You don't get sick from eating too much. All right, now to the story of Mr. and Mrs. Fred Hopkins of Big Stone, South Dakota.
Mr. and Mrs. Fred Hopkins, well, where does their story begin, Aunt Penny?
Starts right in their home at Big Stone. They decided that they'd take a train, go to Fargo, to visit their married daughter, Cora, who married a young man by the name of Luther Upjohn. Luther was a truck farmer, and they lived so many miles away that finally Mr. and Mrs. Hopkins saved up enough money to take a train trip.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we find them standing there at Big Stone.
Well, Mrs. Fred Hopkins, I guess this will be goodbye, won't it?
What do you mean, goodbye?
Goodbye to Big Stone.
Oh, yes. I thought you were going to climb off the train. It's already leaving Big Stone.
Of course not, Mrs. Fred Hopkins.
Big Stone looks funny when you look at it from here, doesn't it?
Big Stone looks littler and littler as we get further and further away.
It certainly does. Just think, it's the first time we've ever been out of Big Stone.
Say, did you think to pack my harmonica?
Yes. It's in the big bag there.
Oh, fine.
I think that's back in the baggage car.
I won't get it out right now to play it, but I might like a tune later.
Are we going to go over the Yazoo City Bridge?
I don't know which route this train takes. Could very well...
Wait.
Wait, Mrs. Fred Hopkins.
What, Fred?
Do you hear nothing?
Why, this be a ghost train. We're moving and there's no sound.
Come on, let's get out of here.
Well, that's all I can tell you now, Danny.
Oh, goodness gracious, Aunt Penny. You can't stop the story there.
Well, I have to stop it right there because of time limitations.
Well, I want another one of these ginger snaps before I go.
Well, you can have all you want because, you know, they're made with easily digested chicken fat.
Well, looks like we've got to halt the story right here, ladies. But you be sure and join Aunt Penny when she picks up the story of Mrs. Fred Hopkins next time.
That's right. That's what Danny said, and he speaks the truth, because I'll be back next time with the story of Mr. and Mrs. Fred Hopkins.
Be sure you join us then, ladies, when Aunt Penny continues the story of Big Stone, Mr. and Mrs. Fred Hopkins, and of their adventures. And until then, Aunt Penny reminds you.
Tune in next time for Mr. and... Oh, forget it. Sorry, Fred Hopkins.
Again, ladies, this is Danny in Aunt Penny's true-to-life sunlit kitchen, ready for another true-to-life Aunt Penny story. And I see that you just baked off some delicious cookies.
No, they're not. No, I was just oven drying out some air conditioning filters. Don't want to eat those, Danny.
Sunlight is streaming in through the kitchen window so much, I'm going to pull the shade down just a little bit, if you don't mind, while I sit back and listen to your true-to-life story. There we are.
Put it up, Danny. It's too dark here. Now, I can't tell a story that way.
But, Aunt Penny, it's...
Put it up, I said, Danny. Now, I won't have you here doing that.
Oh.
That's
together.
Now, Aunt Penny, the ladies and I are so anxious to hear what today's story is about.
Cut it up, Aunt Penny.
Not as sunlighty as it was when I came in, Aunt Penny.
Sun's going back of a cloud. Well, the
story. If we could really call it your sunlit, true-to-life kitchen.
All right, Danny.
Let me have another cookie, will you, Aunt Penny?
Help Danny. Now then, Danny, did I tell you they're made of chicken fat?
Yes, you did, Aunt Penny.
Sit in your stomach like a half a dollar piece.
I know. I like this kind with raisins on it.
Yes. Why? Make any with raisins.
Oh. Well, we're anxious to find out about your story anyway, Aunt Penny.
Well,
I'm going to just pull the shade down a little bit, Aunt Penny, because
all right.
The sun has come out again.
All right, Danny. Not too far. That's far enough, Danny. Now, put it up a little, Danny.
How's that?
It's too far. Well, it's up to you. I just soon have it rolled all the way up myself, because I like my silent kitchen just pouring in.
Oh, looking at that old clock on the wall, Aunt Penny, I see our time is up for today, and I've certainly enjoyed it.
Wait a minute, Danny. Will you put up the shade first, please? Before you sign us off today.
I'll do that on the way out, Aunt Penny.
Well, join us next time, ladies, because Aunt Penny will continue the story which we're all waiting to hear.
Don't forget to put up the shade before you leave.
I'll do it on my way out, Aunt Penny. Now, this is Danny saying so long for Aunt Penny's True to Life story.
Just wanted to remind you to be tuned for the story of Mr. and Mrs. Stone.